This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This program contains themes of an adult nature. Word for Word is an in-depth look into the lives of real people, which means this episode may contain explicit accounts of real-life events, including alcohol and drug use. The language used at times may cause some offence, but has been left uncensored due to the accuracy of the story. No offence is intended, and we hope you enjoy the program.
Across Australia on the Community Radio Network, to over 70 community stations around the nation, this is Word for Word, coming to you from Australia's LGBTI radio station, Joy.
Welcome family and friends, fans and fiends to today's special edition of Word for Word in celebration of Joy's 25 years of music. I want to thank you for tuning in today as we are backstage with Boy George at Sydney's Fox Studios. I am Benjamin Norris and it's simply a delight to continue to work on this show for the Joy Network, which has already featured some of the community's strongest voices. In the tradition of this ongoing program, I continue to look at powerful stories and insights into the life and lifestyle of some incredible people. Each week we chat to those in and around the community who have inspired us, entertained us, but mostly they've made an impact on the queer community of Australia. Today's guest is one of them. Born in London and now calling LA home, this man has constantly been pushing the boundaries of both music and sexuality and has become an LGBTI icon of the world. He showed signs of his rebellious attitude from the beginning, and even being expelled from high school, he constantly proved that he was born to go against the grain. He changed his name and formed his own distinct personality and soon gained international success as the breakout star of Culture Club. With his androgynous appearance and unique outfits, he has constantly been in the public eye no matter what he does. A talented singer, songwriter and DJ, he has constantly reinvented himself and has therefore maintained his popularity and success. Now a coach on The Voice Australia, he is unapologetically himself and continues to be inspirational to the LGBTI community. I'd like to welcome you and welcome Boy George to Word for Word.
These days, we should probably be calling Boy George Man George because he's been around for so long.
You have to let people be who they are. People don't change.
Boy George's career is nothing short of extraordinary.
My first guest, who was known as pop culture's answer to Greta Garbo.
I kind of took on that role of being the sort of attention seeker, the exhibitionist.
In terms of my sexuality, I was told what I was before I even knew what I was.
Boy George has also had some stumbles along the way.
The Culture Club frontman having sold 100 million records.
What pop star hasn't made headlines for all the wrong reasons?
People are terrified of something that they can't relate to.
Do you really want to hurt me? Really just changed your life.
I mean, I certainly didn't think I'd be sitting here in 30 years' time talking to you.
Are you sober?
I'm very sober.
He was arrested by the authorities in New York City.
Obviously, when I got arrested, it was a bit of a low point.
Young George always felt a misfit.
Because I've kind of cleaned up my life and I'm not drinking or doing drugs and I'm, you know, pretty clear-headed and positive and, you know, really happy at the moment as well.
This is an exciting time for us because with Joy we're celebrating 25 years. There's three LGBTI radio stations that are 24 hours a day like Joy. We are one of them. And so we're very proud to have you because people are listening and resubscribing at the moment. Can you give me a tip on how you have longevity? Because you have this amazing longevity.
Well, first of all, 25 years, you've got to say quarter of a century, Mexico thing. Longevity, I think it's just show up, try and be professional, try and be interesting, and everything else is kind of just accidental. I mean, I think Tom Waits once said, like prostitutes are monuments, if you stick around long enough, you get respect, which I think is a great quote. I don't know who he was talking about. He may have been talking about me. I try to be myself. And I think that for me at the moment, it feels like modern culture's on this kind of endless loop and everybody's crying and expressing themselves and being authentic and real and not real. And it's sometimes hard to decide who's telling the truth. I wasn't brought up to be a pop star. You know, that term didn't exist when I started my career. So it wasn't, you know, when people say, oh, he looks like a star, it's like, what does that even mean? Because nobody's a star until they become one. Do you know what I mean? I mean, like, in reality, you make sense of your life in hindsight. It's like everything makes sense looking back. But when you're living it, you're just winging it. You're clinging to a rock, you know. Some people do it better than others. Jerry Hall looks great clinging to a rock. Some of us don't look so good, you know. And it's just that thing of you're making up as you go along, thinking everything you do. Obviously, you know, I can sing. I know I've got a talent for singing. I like to write. But a lot of it I've learned to do. I'm still learning to be who I am.
Are you aware of the impact that you've had on so many people, though?
Yeah, I'm aware that, you know, people have been affected by things I've done. Mm. But I have to be honest and say, when I was doing those things, it wasn't like I thought it out. I think people definitely have more of a, because of the internet, people are more on a sort of like a mission to preach things. I think a lot of what I did and my generation did was completely accidental. It was a sort of case of self-obsession that kind of bled into popular culture. It's like we were all just being ourselves and suddenly it made a difference. And I suppose in a way, I've always said, like, sometimes the most political thing you can do is just be honest and be yourself. That could be the most amazing political gesture.
I didn't expect you to be this honest, though, for some reason.
Really?
No, I feel like I'm loving everything that you're saying. But I don't know, I think that, you know, you've been in this industry for so long, you sometimes might, I don't know, you might not be as honest.
I think, look, fame makes you very self-conscious. Mm. And I always look at, obviously, Bowie. I love Bowie. Mm. When I watch Bowie perform, it always looks like he should be there. You can't see the joins. There's a kind of weird sort of, almost like a sort of throwaway confidence, if you like. And I always think, what would Bowie do? What the Queen Mother say? Other than that, I'm just kind of making it up as I go along. But I react very much. I'm very emotional. I react to the way people treat me. You know, I sometimes get conspiracy theories in my head about other people. Mm. I definitely think the world's against me. You know, I've always felt like it's me against the world since I was a kid. And nothing's really changed in that department. But I also have quite a trusting nature. And I also kind of love people.
Yeah.
I love, you know, human beings. Mm. I like to be treated how I treat other people. I could be a bitch.
Surely not.
Yeah, I mean, you haven't seen half of it, what I can do. I mean, if you only knew what I didn't say.
Well, you grew up in Eltham, London. Can you tell me what your childhood was like? Just a little bit. I know you don't like to look
Not at all. I mean, my childhood was insane. You know, lived in a really small house with like six of us kids. My parents, everyone smoked. There was dogs, there was chickens, there was cars propped up on bricks. It was like, you know, I went back there recently, like about 9 years ago, and I was just literally like, how the hell did we live in this house? Like, with everyone smoking and my mum cooking and washing, and just, it was just endless. You know, I think my mother is a saint. I just look at her now and think, how did you do, when you see people now with like nannies and dramas with one kid, and you think, my mum had six of us. You know, my dad was gambling, spending all the money on, you know, horses, and my mum was going around trying to
not lose her mind.
You know, you just go around borrowing things off people, getting food, you know. So, you know, I look at my childhood as it was very colourful. Everybody expressed themselves, maybe overly expressed themselves. A lot of screaming, a lot of shouting, lots of things being thrown.
There's probably a lot of people listening to this right now going, that's my childhood.
That's my life, yeah. I mean, yeah. I think when you were a kid, you definitely think your family is the insane one and you think everybody else is normal. And then later on, as you get older, you realise that some people just don't express themselves in the way you do. So as I've got older, when I wrote my book, people would say, oh, I read your book, it was like my life.
Yeah.
But we just didn't express ourselves in the way that your family did.
What about your nature as a child? Like, what would you say George was like as a kid?
My mum used to describe me as theatrical, highly strong, you know, theatrical. That was the sort of way of describing me, like, I was very highly strong, you know. When you're a little kid and you're gay, you don't really know that there's anything unusual about you. You just going about your business, you know, you like certain things that sparkle, certain pop music, you know, you prefer girls' companies to boys, you don't like football, but you're not conscious that there's anything wrong with you. And then around a certain point of your childhood, other kids start to tell you you're different.
Which is scary, because I think for a lot of kids, especially gay children, they, for themselves, don't know their sexuality. Other people may be aware of it.
Well, I don't think it's even that. I think it's just that they know you're not like them. They know that you don't like the same things. It's a frequency thing. It's like, oh, you're odd. And long before you even know what it is that's different about you, you're made to feel like an outcast. And so you go through all those struggles of being quite needy, wanting people to like you. Yeah. And that kind of shapes you as a person. And eventually you get to the point where, I don't know if I'm there yet, but we just go, I quite like myself. I'm complicated. I'm difficult. I get things wrong. you know, my head's full of conspiracy theories, you know, but I've sort of got people in my life that I can share stuff with and just
but also
say,
keep you on track.
Say, am I right?
Yeah.
Am I wrong? You can always talk yourself around a situation if you're smart, you know.
What about the relationship that you have with your parents? Like, with
my dad's dead now.
But, like, growing up?
Yeah, growing up, my dad was like a ball of contradictions. Somebody once described Mick Jagger to me as a nice bunch of guys. That's my dad.
Okay.
My dad was amazing. He was open-minded. He was quite small-minded. He was just a contradiction.
Yeah.
But when I came out, he was amazing.
Well, you know what? We're going to get into that in just a little bit, but I think it would be remiss of us if we didn't count down your top 5 songs of all time. And kick it off, we've got Culture Club, Karma Chameleon.
Is it love?
So anyone knows they're listening at home right now, we are live at the backstage of The Voice with Boy George, and we don't know what that noise is in the background. We're in a tent.
It sounds like rain, like Australian virulent rain that you get here.
5 siblings is a lot of siblings. Mm. So what is your relationship like with them?
Well, I'm in the middle.
Piggy so in the middle.
The needy kid, you know, totally, you know, not cool enough to hang out with the older ones.
too cool to hang out with the younger ones, you know,
yeah.
left to my own devices, that kind of thing, you know, sort of a great wanderer.
Mm.
I used to go off when I was like 10 years old, like go off to the big city,
yeah, by
get on a bus on my own,
yeah,
go off to big stores and look at, you know, the fashions and wander around, lie to my mother that I was at my friend's house and just be going. You know, I mean, I could have got in so much trouble, but I was just, you know, I wanted to find other people like me. I wanted to find, to coin a Delta phrase, my tribe. I wanted to find people that were like me, and that's, you know, that's true. I just,
yeah,
I was like, every time I saw anyone that was unusual, I'd be like, oh, that's, that person should be my friend, you know, and I kind of felt like, first time I saw David Bowie, I was like, well, I'm going to be best friends with him and going to be hanging out at his house. And
did you become best friends?
No, no, I was always a fan. Okay. I mean, we did meet, but yeah. I was always a fan.
I know what that feeling's like. I think it's happening to me right now. did you have a dynamic maybe that you played amongst your siblings, though? Like, was there a role? Because I know for me, I was always trying to be the comedian. I was always trying to make everyone laugh.
Drama queen.
Yeah.
Funny, ha-ha. But all my brothers are funny.
Are
you know, they're all comedians. Oh my God, they're nightmares, all of them. They're
do you all still hang out for Christmas and stuff?
Yeah, yeah. And they're all sort of quite, there's a lot of personality in my family. You know, Christmas dinner at my family home is, it's not a quiet affair. I think we're a better family now that we're older. I think, you know, when my dad passed away, I think we got closer. And I think as you get older, you do more stuff. Like, you know, you make an effort to be with each other. You call more. You just, you know, family becomes more important, I think, as you get older. Not for everybody, but certainly for me.
Yeah. How old were you, though, when your father passed away?
It was about 9 years ago.
Did that change you in a way?
Yeah, it was quite powerful, you know, because my dad was such an incredible kind of force of nature. Mm. Do you know what I mean? To sort of not have my dad in the world is the maddest thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, you just have to kind of accept these things. It's part of living.
I lost my father 11 years ago. He committed suicide, which was quite hard. But I always say to people, it doesn't matter what age you are, when your parents leave the world,
yeah.
it's like a gravitational pull. And even if you might not have had the best relationship with them, whatever, it affects you in a way that you could not understand unless you lost a parent.
No, I think it's really hard to explain. And, but for me, you know, obviously, I'm so much like my dad. I was the one that went out of my way not to be like my father. I didn't work for him. All my brothers worked for my dad. I refused. I wanted to paint and decorate myself. I wasn't going to do a 9-to-5. I resisted everything about my dad. But in the end, I was really able to say, I'm so much like my father. It's scary, you know. And it's quite funny too. But there was a point where I went, oh my God, this is so freaky. I'm a dad. I wear a lot more makeup.
It makes me feel really emotional for you to say this, because in lots of ways you're living on and you're carrying his legacy. He gets to live on through you.
Yeah, and you know, my I think we're always like a sort of mix of our parents. You know, my dad had amazing qualities and terrible qualities. I can say that I have all of them. I'm not going to list them. You know, I've got that.
This is like a therapy session where you're sitting there going...
Life is like a therapy session, you know, and you think... I think that you're always kind of working out why you're like you are. Why do I react to things the way I do?
Uh-huh.
You know, and I can always say that's my dad. The thunder part of my nature is my dad. But the good news is that it's over quickly. You know, thunder is like, right, drama, make a cup of tea. And that is me. You know, that's all so my dad. Yeah.
What about when you came out to them? What were they like when you told them that you were gay?
My mum, well, I didn't really have to tell them. It was like, okay, now we work out what it is, you know. The funniest story, I think, is my dad being in his builder's van, turning the radio down to my brothers and saying, your brother's a bit funny. And I'm like, we know what he is. My dad used to turn the radio down when he wanted to make an announcement.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, Dad, we know he's gay. Pufta, they used to say in the 70s, not gay. That gay didn't work. That was a polite word.
It's strange how far we've come, though. And you look at kids coming out now. Don't you think it's strange that there's such a difference to what it was like for you, for me, and what it is like coming out now?
It is. But I think it's always difficult. I think that it depends where you are. It's a geographical thing as well. If you live in a city, if you've got cool parents.
Yeah.
But then you've also got to go into the world. You know, I used to get criticised for saying the world hasn't changed, but what I would say is it's a bit like the civil rights movement.
Mm.
People didn't become less racist. Black people just stopped tolerating, you know.
They started standing up for themselves.
They started saying, we're not having this. And it's the same with gay people.
Yeah, sure.
People aren't less homophobic. They're still terrified. But they're like, it was gay people saying, no, not having this.
Yeah.
And you have to kind of empower yourself to create change, you know. So it's not that people don't still snigger when they see you with a guy and think, oh, which one's the lady?
Or the face full of
makeup. Whatever they think. You know, people just assume. I've been in clubs with my brother-in-law, my sister's husband, and people go, how long have you been together? There he is! You can't be a gay man and be friends with someone if you...
They just automatically know.
It's amazing the assumptions people make. You know, and I do joke that my gayness takes up about 4 hours a month at a push. You know, I wish it took up more time, but, you know, it's like people just think, oh, that's all you are.
Well, you know what? I think we'll delve into that in just a little bit, but we are counting down your top five songs of all time, and this is number two, Culture Club, Do You Really Want to Hurt Me?
Give me a time.
This by love's without a reason.
just for the people at home, we have Delta Goodrum that's just joined us.
Hello,
how are you going? Sorry, my name's Ben.
Vision in Denon.
Hello, hello. Do you want me to leave you?
No, no, it's fine. Hang on,
up to you, mate. If it's,
sit here next to George and listen.
How old were you when you had your first relationship?
Relationship?
Your first relationship.
I don't even know if I had one yet. relationship. The first time I fell in love was probably when I was about 16, and I was convinced that I was in love with this boy, and, you know, it really wasn't love. What happened was, it's a really funny story, we were, like, coming back from a club, and we were going through, like, this sort of area where I lived, and we obviously dressed up a bit, like, punky, and these guys were like, birthdays, and I grabbed his hand, and he went mental. He was like, what are you doing? And I was
were
like,
you confident that he might have been gay, or were you
no,
just
no,
hoping?
We were boyfriends.
Oh, okay,
and
right.
It was like, don't make it obvious, and I was devastated. So I was like, oh, you don't want people to know? Obviously, at that point, you know, I was very young and people weren't yep. out. So we could have got beaten up. And that's what he meant. Mm. That you could have got us beaten up. I think that we all use each other to kind of define who we are. I don't have an issue with anyone's sexuality. And I just, like, I can understand why people fancy women. Women are gorgeous. I'm not one of those weird gay men that goes, ew, I don't understand. I mean, I think we have attraction. And some people define it in literal terms. But I think that, you know, we all fall in love with people of the same sex. We might necessarily want to sleep with them. But I think there's always a lot of attraction going on in the world. But we, some of us sort of define it in a more rigid way.
Have you fallen in love with Delta a little bit since you've been here in Australia?
Everyone falls in love with Delta. I mean, she's a beautiful girl, you know.
The first thing I said when we got in here, I was like, have you seen Delta as Olivia Newton-John?
Oh,
and
no.
I haven't yet.
Haven't yet.
Are you going to have a screening party
yeah,
at your place?
Yeah.
All right, I'm just inviting myself along to this. If you could give yourself some advice as a 12-year-old, if you could go back and give young boy George some advice, what would it be?
Don't do that. I mean, unfortunately, you don't get to rewind your life, and it's a mad thing. As you think, you know, what happens is you sort of get to a certain age and you go, oh my God, I sound like my mother.
Mm.
But you don't listen to people when you're 19. You know, it's a bit like what we're doing on the show. When people are really young, they're just looking at you like, what do you know about it? You know, you're old. How could you possibly have any wisdom? And I think it's one of those funny things that you get to a point in your life and you go, oh my God, my mother was so right about that.
I know.
But also, I don't think you ever want to take advice from older people. You want to do it yourself, which you already are saying. Like, if you went back in time and spoke to yourself, you were kind of like, I'm rebellious. I'm not going to take that on board.
You'd be surprised how much I listen.
Right.
I may not appear to be listening. I go off and I have little tantrums and I go off and I go, is this helpful? And obviously we've got people around me, we've got people who look after us, and they'll say, why did you do that? Why did you say that? I don't know why I did that and why I said that. You know, so I think what it is having the ability to kind of, like, to notice what you're doing. You know, like, when you're 19, you don't notice it, do you?
Yeah.
Just go, I'm not sorry, I've done nothing wrong. But as you get older, I think you get better at going, okay, that probably wasn't the best way to handle it.
You know what? We're going to continue counting down your top five songs in no particular order, and this is Boy George, The Crying Game.
First
later.
Bye,
see you.
Bye,
lovely
bye,
to meet you. I'll see you in the week, yeah?
Yeah, you will.
All right, cool.
Yeah, okay.
All right, cool.
Bye.
Bye.
Your story wakes people up in a way, and you've always been quite different to other people. Why do you think for so many years people have connected with you?
I don't know, really. I think sometimes, like being on TV, you know, it's like you become, people just get familiar with you. I always joke that I enjoy things in spite of myself. Like, I have experiences that go, well, actually, that was quite fun, but I wasn't expecting it to be fun. I wasn't expecting to enjoy myself.
You mentioned this week that you were unhappy with who you were growing up and that you then created Boy George to become something better.
Yeah.
What's the difference then between Boy George and George Alan O'Dowd?
I don't think there is a difference in terms of who I am as a person, but, you know, when you dress up, you become sort of a little bit more confident. And people definitely treat me different when I'm like this.
Okay.
If I turn up to something in my civvies, people are a little bit disappointed.
I would have been.
You know, they'll be like, you know. And so, you know, it's like anyone. You know, when you put on your best Sunday clothes, you know, you put your eyelashes on, you know, little, I don't know, you know, women know this, right? You know, a little bit of BB cream.
It's
it
so
sort
true,
of
though.
Gives you a little edge. You know?
I interviewed Paris the drag queen, who's an Australian drag queen, and she was saying...
No,
she
is.
Oh, really?
No, I'm very down with that.
She said to me recently that she wanted to come into this interview, so we were going to set it up for her, and she then came without the drag on. And then at the end of the interview, she apologised. She said, I wasn't who I should have been.
Yeah.
But I was like, is there really a duality that does get created in a way?
I think that, let's call it all drag, let's say everything that's not what you normally wear or nakedness is drag. You know, it is quite a powerful message. You know, it's a double-edged sword. It's like, look at me, but don't look at me.
Yeah, sure.
It's like a strange dichotomy that you're kind of dressed up and you get loads of attention, but at the same time, you're sort of wearing a mask.
What was it that drew you to music? Like, when was it that you knew that this was your passion?
Music's like... It's salvation.
Yeah.
It's like somewhere to get lost. All that music in the 70s, drama. The first time I saw Shirley Bassey, you know, in my book, I say when I was a little boy, I wanted to be Shirley Bassey. I remember vividly seeing Shirley Bassey singing Never, Never, Never in a white strapless gown, sequins, you know, I'd like to run away from you. And just, you know, going, oh, who's that? You know, just...
Yeah.
It's sort of magpie thing, isn't it? It's like you just get drawn to its glamour. It's fantasy. It's another world that you don't live in.
Do you have a memory of going home and sort of recreating it when you were younger? Like, I know for me, I got the doona and wrapped it around myself and put a belt on it.
Yeah, there was a lot of sort of in the bedroom. more sort of like when no one was watching.
Yeah.
You know, gesticulating.
Was there an age where you felt unconfident and that you were doing it behind closed doors because you worried about what people thought?
The funniest story ever was my father's sister, my Auntie Josie, was the most beautiful woman you've ever seen. She was like a Hollywood film star. She was stunning. She used to wear really short skirts, you know, and everybody was like, oh, she, you know, Martin dressed as lamb.
Yeah.
She used to, all the older people were like, oh, look who you think she is, but she was drop dead gorgeous. And I remember this one day she sent a box of clothes that she kind of was, had enough of to my mother. And my mother was like, why would you think I would wear any of this stuff? Look at it. You know, and there was, my mom was horrified. And there was this silver Lurex flared catsuit with a zip up to the neck.
Amazing.
I got it out and I got it on and my shoes on, brother's platform shoes, edged towards the living room, you know, to the front door and all, like, and my dad was like, get that off now, upstairs. And that was my life as a kid. It was like dyeing the inside of my hair blue with a felt tip pen, covering it so that my dad wouldn't see. My dad clocked straight away, what's that in your hair? You know, I was always stopped from doing
those sorts of things.
Mainly out of fear, like someone's going to beat you up. If you go out of the house like that, you're going to get attacked.
That's fear from a parent, though. The parents are always going to be like that. I think
talking to Sheldon about this, and little Sheldon's on my team, he said that, you know, his dad and mum used to stop him. And I understand that because it's like they don't trust the world. And they know that if you go out there and you stand out, you're likely to get
hurt,
picked on.
That's parents being fearful for their children.
But it's also sometimes... embarrassment. Where did he come from?
Have you ever embarrassed your family?
Please, do you read the papers?
With your goal starting out in music, did you have a goal being when you were younger thinking, that's where I want to go?
We didn't know about this stuff when we started out. It was such a different world now, like where people know what's possible, know how much money they can make. You know, this whole thing of being a pop star, it wasn't a concept when I was a kid.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it was like Bowie was... otherworldly. It's like you couldn't dress like Bowie, you couldn't be Bowie if you came from Eltham. Oh. You know, you could dream of it. And then punk rock came along, and punk rock changed the rules of music. It's like you don't even have to be able to sing anymore. You can just get up there and scream.
Yeah.
You can learn bass in 3 days. And that's what was happening. And so that was a huge influence on my generation. I was like, well, they're doing it. Why can't I do it? You know, it was just about the spirit of self-expression. And I think punk was a huge turning point for me as a kid, because it just opened that doorway in the way that technology has now opened the doorway to kids now.
And where music is going.
Yeah, where people can make a record in their bedroom. And they can kind of, you know, start an online blog. And, you know, there's a downside and a positive side to all of this stuff, you know. The downside is that people don't really have to learn a craft anymore. There's no real journey. I know we talk about the journey a lot, but there is really no journey. You know, everyone's like, oh, your journey. And,
that's how we troll other people. People often ask that question. They go, what's the advice? Why do you look young? Or why did you get this talent? And you come up with stupid reasons as to why you've obtained this. But the reality is you don't actually know.
Luck.
You're like, luck, chance and circumstance, my friend. Put yourself out there.
I think it's luck. I think there's obviously, I can't think of anything else I want to do. So I love the fact that I get up every day and I can do the things I love and get paid for it.
Well, you know what? We could be doing this all day, and for the diehard fans, they're going to be loving it. But we are also counting down your top 5 songs of all time. So this is Culture Club, Miss Me Blind.
I miss me. I know you miss me. I know you miss me, blind.
Who came up with Boy George? Like, how
did that... When we first started Culture Club, we did all these photos, and obviously I didn't have a beard then. It was very feminine. And I was like young, and people say, who's the girl? And I'd be like, girl. And then I sort of thought, oh, I quite like the fact that people think I'm a girl. And it was just like the whole...
You have to classify that it's Boy George.
Well, I was just like, it's funny if I call myself Boy George, but I look like a girl. I thought it was hilarious.
You've talked about this a little bit, David Bowie and like Patti Smith and Cyndi Lauper. It's different people, different musicians that have influenced you, which I think is amazing. Is there an artist at the moment that's influencing you?
It's more like kind of songs for me. James Blake, Anoni I love.
Yeah.
She's got a new track out called Miracle that's just beautiful. You know, I'm always making playlists. I love Spotify because if you put certain things in a playlist, they sort of target you and they go, oh, what about this? And I can go from like Pantera to Dolly Parton, no problem. And I can like the most ridiculous things that don't go together. So there's never like, oh, I don't like this or I don't like that. I just like what I like. And I love jumping from one thing to the other. That's why I love the 70s, because like,
you'd hear
Cliff Richard, and then you did a punk rock song, and then you did Dolly Parton, and then you did some other mad foreign band from France, you know, singing Zampam Plumois or whatever, or like the singing nun. The 70s was so trippy.
They were having a wild time.
What year were you born?
1980.
Oh, wow.
So you just missed it, but literally, you got
the tail end of it. It was insane.
I was still around for the 80s, so like, you're an icon for me. Like, when I think of the 80s, I can think of five artists that I go, bang, 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 you're on my hand when I do that. And it resonates. But that really was the 80s.
I suppose having grown up, you know, as a kid in the 60s, really young, got my sort of music education in the 70s, then had my career in the 80s and so on, DJing, all of that. I have so many interesting reference points that, you know, people think, oh, what do you know about that? I'm like, well, actually, I've done that, and I love that, and I love, you know, I'm DJing next week Café Del Mar. I love DJing.
Well, you're good at it. I'm all right.
You know, it's sort of... but if you love something, it's just... I love it. And, you know, we were in my room this morning, I got the decks delivered, I had a little rave in the room.
What about competitiveness? Have you ever been competitive?
Oh, I'm like, not competitive.
Can we talk about... You know what I'm saying to you when I say this? Like, can we just have a little bit of a bitch session with Boy George? But have you ever been competitive with other artists?
Of course. You know, I mean, you know, and you sort of realise... This show makes you really competitive. I mean,
of course.
It brings out the worst in everybody.
It's like, designed that way.
Of course. And so you just think, oh, I forgot that I was like that. I forgot that I've got that tendency. And it just... It's awful because it's sort of... In your normal life, you don't have to say those things and you have to sell yourself. You just walk in the room and it's like, Boy George. And then suddenly you're sitting there with Kelly, Delta, Joe Jonas. And you have to kind of justify who you are. And it's the weirdest experience. You have to go... Stevie Wonder, and I've sort, you know, and it's you say inappropriate things, and then you just think, oh, I can't believe I said that. And of course, you can't unsay it because then it's all in the papers.
Well, most of the stuff that you're doing at the moment is live, so you can't check the tapes, we can't be doing this.
Honey, I've got a good memory. Just to clarify, I know what I said, and I know why I said it. And if you take something out of context, of course, it means something else. I could say, I'm not a makeup artist, but I can apply makeup.
That's true.
So what I said to Sam was, you're not really a singer. I didn't say you can't sing. That would be far too rude. And it's not something I'd ever say to anybody.
And you've got $1,000 bet on this.
Well, I looked at the tape.
Oh, yeah.
But Kelly's never going to take $1,000 off me. She wants more than that. She's going to give me 10, bitch.
She wants millions of your dollars.
Whatever, you know. I would never insult her by offering $1,000 anyway. But I know what I said.
What about competitiveness in the 80s? Were there people you were competitive of?
Everybody.
Just everyone.
Everybody was a threat. Everybody was like, when you get older, you sort of realize you're only in competition with yourself and none of it really matters. But everyone has a nemesis. Everyone, current pop stars, they probably all hate Justin Bieber, don't they?
Is there a difference between being compared to and being competitive?
Well, I see pictures of people in hats and everybody says, oh, Boy George, everyone who wears a hat. So for God's sake, anyone can wear a hat. It doesn't mean it's me. You know, it's like, or anyone that's gay. You know, Sam Smith came along. Apparently he looks like me. It's like there's only one gay person. You can't have more than one. It's the funniest thing.
It's so weird.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like, oh, yeah, I got two eyes and a nose. So, yeah, I'm just like every gay person.
Like picking your favourite child, I want you to tell me what your favourite song is of all time from yours.
From mine? The new one that's coming, You Give Me Life. I think it's my favourite thing I've written in 20 years. Definitely. It's, you know, it's very personal. I think you really, like, you know, the older you get, the more you record, you do struggle sometimes to find, like, you know, you want to be in the world, you've got to be in the world to write about stuff. What do you write about, you know, when you're at a certain level in your career? Do you know what I mean? I think it's such an interesting challenge.
It's interesting, though, that you say that this song is the song that you are loving them, like it's your favourite out of your back catalogue of music. Yeah. Where are you drawing your inspiration for music at the moment?
Everywhere.
Walking down the street.
Yeah, everywhere. Everything. I mean, I hear things. I love like the whole kind of electro. I mean, like sort of, you know, I don't know if you ever heard like sort of Electro Clash, things like Crossover, Peaches, yeah. Ladytron. I still love that stuff. To me, that's like pop music. So, like, when I'm at home, I listen to things like Crossover and, you know, just things from like that period. You know, I was listening to My Robot Friend yesterday. I was like, I forgot how much I love this, you know.
There's lots of people listening to this right now from the LGBTI community, and you are one of the strongest LGBTI influencers of the world, like setting the tone for so many people. Have you got advice for those people that are listening to this right now?
I think just you've got this amazing thing now called the internet, and it's so weird. I post things online and people go, what's that? Like, I Google it. God's sake, you know, if you want a recipe, if you want a fashion tip, if you want to find out who an artist is from the past, this is like a minefield. It's a treasure trove.
And it's amazing.
It amazes me that, you know, and what I do try to do is talk about things I love, rather than focusing on things I don't like.
Yeah.
I'd rather say, this is amazing, listen to this band. So I'm very passionate about music, and hence why I get so competitive on the show, because I always think I'm the person that knows the most, and I'm the person that would do more interesting things with you. And if I didn't think that, I wouldn't be here. But I'm always sort of thinking, how can I be a better version of myself? What can I say? I don't want to be, you know, a lot of, you know, things get misinterpreted, like you didn't listen to what I said.
Mm.
If you're not listening, you can interpret it any way you choose, but that's not what I said. Listen to me and then you'll learn something.
There's definitely people that are listening to this right now that have definitely learned so much. Just very quickly, my boyfriend's made me watch the last two seasons of The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. So I've never watched it before, and I've seen you on it a few times. And I watched these two episodes and started talking like Dorit for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I had all of her mannerisms, and it was really embarrassing because my mum said, oh, who are you talking like now? Like,
well, you see, I don't think, like, I know Dorit, and I don't think her accent's weird because she's Dorit.
Where's that accent from?
Everywhere. I think it's Connecticut, a little bit of New York, then LA. And of course, she's married to PK, who's very British.
Yeah.
Like, PK sounds like one of my brothers. He's like got this really broad, almost like he's from the North London, but he's got this very London accent, talks like that, you know, proper geezer. And so I think it's all of that stuff. Yeah, and who cares? So it's like, you know, listen, she's the most interesting person on the show.
Do you sit there and watch the show with her and say you shouldn't
have said
that?
I watch it before. Oh, always. I don't tell her, I tell him.
Just put it in an email.
Do you know any Cancerians? You can't tell Cancerians anything.
Nothing!
You can't tell them anything. Okay, so I will say to Pika, she's going to get in trouble for that, and I'm normally right.
Yeah, always.
But
I'm
you know,
so disappointed we didn't get to talk about your star sign, because you're a Gemini.
I'm a Gemini.
And I am obsessed with Geminis, to be honest.
Roses are red, violets are blue, I'm schizophrenic, and so am I.
Well, this has been absolutely amazing, but just before we let you go, we are counting down that top 5 songs of yours of all time. So this is Live My Life, Boy George, which was actually your first solo entry into the Hottest 100.
Nice to talk to you. I like the casual nature of the whole thing. It's good.
I'm so sorry to have talked about Dorit, and I'm like, right. It's still so exciting.
People think I sleep at the end of their bed. It's very
Do
funny.
You?
No. And people are like, are they with you? I'm like, no, they're not with me.
But aren't you living in the house with them?
Yeah, now and then.
Every now and again.
Although now they have the film cameras, I sleep. I go to hotels, so I can't be waking up at like 9 in the morning.
They give you a notification.
Yeah, with a camera in my face, like, no. You know, so, but it's great fun. And she's lovely.
She comes across that way. Well, look, I have to say, Boy George, thank you for joining us. We're celebrating 25 years on Joy, and it's been a privilege and an honour to have you on our airwaves. I just want to say what a fantastic opportunity it was to be able to get Boy George to join us here on Joy. 25 years of stories, 25 years of music. We're celebrating a lot at the moment. If you are listening and you haven't resubscribed, we are in the middle of Radiothon, so make sure you do so. I tell you what, Boy George is 80s royalty and he's still kicking. What a fantastic opportunity to have him here today.
Word for Word is presented and produced by Ben Norris from Australia's LGBTI radio station, Joy. Word for Word is distributed nationally to over 70 radio stations across the community radio network.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.